Welcome to Power Play on the day we saw the Prime Minister depart for a four-day hobnob with the world's elite at Switzerland's World Economic Forum, while talks aimed at salvaging NAFTA fired up in Montreal. Coming up, the latest explainer on what happened to shut down the U.S. government for 3 days and who wears the blame for the impasse, which ended this afternoon. Rick Klein is standing by. And a truce has been declared in the spat over Alberta workers entering Saskatchewan construction sites. All it took was, wait for it, beer. We'll get the details from Alberta's minister on the file. And suicide continues to plague Indigenous youth, a movement by young people to give hope to those feeling hopeless. Pitch their ideas to federal politicians today. We'll ask them what will stop the epidemic. But first, the U.S. government shutdown ended this afternoon amid the usual blame game and finger pointing.
Recent offer to the president was a generous one. I put his signature campaign issue on the table in exchange for DACA, and still, he turned away. President Trump's unwillingness to compromise caused the Trump shutdown and brought us to this moment.
I think if we've learned anything during this process, it's that a strategy to shut down the government over the issue of illegal immigration is something the American people didn't understand and would not have understood in the future. So I'm glad we've gotten past that and we have a chance now to get back to work.
All right, let's size up the cost and the consequences with our eagle eye on the Capitol. That would be ABC political director Rick Klein. He joins us from Washington. All right, Rick, which side caved to end the showdown?
Democrats gave Donald Trump most of what he wanted in this, and you end up opening the government without any significant concessions. All they have now is a vague promise that the Senate is going to consider immigration next. No promise around what's in that bill, no promise that the House would ever take it up, no promise that the president would be on board. So they gave away quite a lot because they realized that the optics of this, of shutting down the government, as Mitch McConnell said, over the issue of illegal immigration, it just was going to not be a winner in the medium to long term. So it was over basically before it started.
And the wall's going ahead, is it?
Well, this is significant, I think. The fact that Chuck Schumer is now publicly committed to saying, I'll give you the wall, all of the money you want for the wall, in exchange for legalizing the status of the 800,000 Dreamers, that is a major change in these negotiations, and it means that's the baseline for further talks. And it does look like that wall is one step closer to becoming a reality as a result of this episode.
Yeah, I was quite surprised at that as well. I mean, isn't the art of negotiation you give something and you get something back? I mean, how could the Democrats not at least extract something other than this vague promise to look down the road at the immigration Dreamers issue?
I think the Democrats got a little over their skis on this. They went a little further than they wanted to at this time. They realized that. They saw it start to bake in over the weekend with a whole bunch of Democrats from Republican parts of the country saying, wait a second, this is not what I signed up for. A lot of my constituents are worried about illegal immigration. I don't want to be on board on this. And then I think the Senate Democratic leader realized they just held a bad hand. They had to fold and look to at least sit down at the table another time with President Trump.
So as you pointed out, you don't want to be seen as defending illegal immigrants at the same time you're hurting Americans getting their access to their services. Is that it?
I think that's right. And look, government shutdowns happen from time to time. They're never for really good reasons. This one was even sillier than most, in my estimation, because the crux of what they were arguing over, things like children's health insurance, things like taking care of veterans and taking care of the troops and the funding the military, even legalizing the status of these 800,000 Dreamers, these are not things that the parties actually disagree on. This wasn't about big, bold principle. It was about political positioning. And I think the recognition here is that no one was really benefiting from this going on for a protracted period of time.
I'm curious what you think. I mean, that wasn't just a couple of weeks ago you and I were yakking that Donald Trump said, I'll sign whatever they put on my desk when it comes to immigration reform. And now he's sort of saying, I'll sign it if I like it. Where's that going to end up, do you think?
Well, so much of this is predicated on trust. This was trust by the Senate Democrats that they would get to immigration later on. I'll tell you who no one really has a lot of trust for. That's President Trump and his policy positions. He has been meandering. He's been erratic. He's been contradictory. He has said one thing in private, another thing in public, one thing in public, something else in private. It's happened to people in both parties just on this one narrow issue, to say nothing of others. So I think it's a real problem if you're trying to negotiate. As Chuck Schumer said, it feels like you're negotiating with Jell-O.
All right, so does Trump get to crow about how wonderful he was on this one, or is he going to stay muted on it?
He probably would anyway. It's been actually, I've been surprised he's been as muted as he has, other than a statement read from the White House podium saying that he's glad that the Democrats have come to their senses. He isn't taking anything beyond that in terms of self-congratulations, at least yet. I think he's stayed out of this on the advice of some people close to him to let Congress work itself out. In this case, it did. In this case, he's able to take a bit of a back seat.
That's the point I wanted to mention. I mean, John Kelly, his chief of staff, was apparently one of the hardliners on immigration, said don't give an inch on this one. So do they come out of this looking better in Trump's eyes, do you think?
I think the hardliners are able to say you don't have to take this deal. They do look better as a result. And it sets off an extraordinary couple of weeks where at the end of this is the possibility of votes on immigration, that it could be anyone's guess where they land. But these are issues that have taken years and years and years to work themselves through. And people have mostly taken a pass in Washington in confronting them. To think that they're all going to come together in the next 17 days seems a little unlikely to me.
Well, let's look beyond 17 days and say, does any of this stick to either side as the midterm campaign engines start revving up at all?
I don't think the government shutdown is going to be even a blip on anyone's radar screen next week, not to say nothing of November. But the perceptions of this time, and if the president is able to walk away saying he got his wall funded, he took care of illegal immigration in some way, he even legalized the status of the 800,000 Dreamers, people who were born here and know no other country, raised in the United States, I think that's a big win for him politically and substantively, and it's something that is part of the argument that he'll be prepared to take to voters.
Okay, Rick, final point. There's an ad circulating, Trump-approved ad, that says the Democrats would be complicit in any police officers killed by illegal immigrants. Is this a taste of the nastiness to come, do you think?
It was stunning, even by Trumpian standards, for this to come out in the middle of these negotiations, to say outright that politicians would be complicit in murder. That is really strong word. Those are strong words, and I think it was telling the White House didn't even want to back that up. They kept saying this was the campaign's decision. They couldn't even say for sure that President Trump approved of the ad, even though it says right at the end, President Donald Trump approved of this ad.
Unbelievable. Well, I think it's going to be a nasty campaign at midterms, never mind what the presidential race will look like in 3 years. Rick Klein, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you, Don.
All right, let's take a sharp detour into another issue we wish we could shut down. More than 70 indigenous youth met today under the banner of We Matter, determined to slow or stop the suicide epidemic among their people. They left behind their chiefs and elders to make sure their voices were heard by Indigenous Services Minister Jane Philpott, amongst others, in what they're calling the Hope Forum. Kelvin Redvers is the co-founder of We Matter, and he joins us in the studio. Welcome to the show, Kelvin. It's a successful summit. But take me into what you've seen as an Indigenous youth. What have you seen when it comes to suicide in your First Nation that you think is sort of indicative of how others are experiencing it?
Sure. So I grew up in the Northwest Territories. I'm a member of the Dene Nuqef First Nation, and it was my sister and I that started this organization. We started it because we've seen and felt these issues ourselves. And in my First Nation, so I grew up in the town next to the First Nation, but we would visit and we spend time, and we've been spending a lot of time lately. It's a town of like 400, but if you talk to community members, they can think in their heads going back 5 years, and they can count on their hands like how many young people have been lost. And these are young. These are like 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds. So we've seen it, and, you know, we felt it ourselves.